sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the second and final part of a speech given by Dr. John McMurtry, author and professor of philosophy at the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada. This is a very powerful speech and was given at the International Citizens Inquiry into 9/11 on May 30th, 2004 in Toronto. I was actually at that conference, but somehow missed Dr. McMurtry's speech. Someone shared it with me recently from hearing it on Bonnie Faulkner's show Guns and Butter on KPFA out of Berkeley, California. She aired it in March of 2010. And you can also find it on globalresearch.ca, where it was also posted in March of 2010. What you'll hear today comes from the Guns and Butter show. The title of the speech is Why the Facts of 9/11 Are Suppressed, with a subtitle called Understanding the Ruling Group Mind Behind the War Without End. So let's get started. Here's Dr. John McMurtry.
U.S. investment interests and defense installations increasingly span the globe in the name of everybody else's liberation. 9/11 is the pivot on which it all turns. In the background, David Rockefeller advised the corporate elect of the beacon of solution long ago. A supranational sovereignty, and this is a quote from him, a supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers, unquote. He long ago explained at the June 1991 Bilderberg annual meeting, quote, is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries. National autodetermination is what's being eliminated. In the foreground, devout 9/11 story believers await the rapture to come. For all the magic of the invisible hand infallibly transfigures infinite self-desire into the best of all possible worlds. That's right into neoclassical economics now, and I'll soon be into that. The optimum means the best of all possible worlds. The 9/11 turn to war across the Middle East, Baghdad, and Central Asia is in this moral universe the intersection of divine plan and history, with God's modern chosen nation now fulfilling the grand mission to liberate peoples everywhere to the promised land of the global free market, with no public realm left anywhere unsubjugated to market disciplines and chief executive command. It's all modeled on the corporate hierarchy of command. The regulating group mind behind the 9/11 or the global market wars. At the core of the borderless meta program, which regulates the perception and understanding of our epoch, lies the ruling group mind. Its ancestor predates the U.S. as a nation, but corporate America and its president express its last global armed crusade. Not even the more ancient duty of the colonial state to build infrastructure instead of destroy it inhibits the pure corporate capitalist form of U.S. empire. Not even the life security of Americans' own citizens figures into the money sequence system into which all that exists is converted. From the water we drink to the genes of what we eat, from the countries of the non-market world to the sky over our heads. For the conversion of all life organization and their conditions into commodities and money demand and perpetual growth is known to be identical to our freedom. Thus, only more market money transactions for price commodities for a profit with no life coordinates anywhere involved count in our national accounts today, including Canada's national account, as development or well-being. This is the inner meaning of what is called, quote, the free world. The fatal problem was evident to Abraham Lincoln over a century ago, and this is not much quoted. Lincoln warned in a private letter, quote, as a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned by the war, as usual, and an era of corruption in high places will follow. And the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed, unquote. That's Lincoln. Lincoln was assassinated within a few months, 5 months of that letter to a colonel. U.S. corporate rule has since been instituted across the world, and now triumphalist over all alternatives invades across the world wherever there is room for, quote, more freedom and development for its money sequencing operations. Whether the civil common sectors and unpriced life spaces within existing capitalist societies or the entire economy and resource stocks of non-capitalist societies which are defenseless against attack. The inner logic of the corporate order's globalization is not dependent on this or that administration, and that's important to remember. It is a meta-program of regulating assumptions, and it has sedimented over centuries into the ruling mindset of our epoch. Its principles are now mathematically enshrined in neoclassical market models, but they are also the regulators of everyday thought across the world. As with the one true faith of a former age, the ruling principles are variously comprehended and normally function at the preconscious level. No one safely challenges, however, any of them. In order to understand the ruling market mind since Adam Smith published its first testament in the year of the American Revolution, we need to understand its system-deciding principles which form the bare metaphysic of the 9/11 wars. This thing goes deep. Together, these principles set the logic of the ruling group mind and the meaning of its invisible hand tech theology, out of which the 9/11 turning point and the new market wars have been fanatic expressions. The regulating structure of market perception and understanding is the determiner of social meaning to which official culture in both industrial and third world societies now tacitly conforms since the end of the opposing superpower in 1991. The fall of the Soviet state marked the decisive turning point in the ascension of the market group mind as having no alternative, the end of history. 9/11 marked a less understood turning point in this meta-program's global dominance by legitimating preemptive attack on any movement or force perceived to stand in the way of its freedom and self-defense. Whether unarmed, quote, violence-threatening protesters, unquote, in domestic public spaces or, quote, suspected terrorists, unquote, in civilian populations of the occupied world. Behind all the infinite variations of times and conditions of which postmodernism is the bacchanalian revel, one unexamined meta-program of perception and judgment has increasingly ruled as the system-deciding market group mind. Its inner logic determines every step of the global market crusade by the U.S. war state before and especially since 9/11, with the latter providing it its carte blanche. What before 9/11 was a world slowly coming under universal norms of life protection and understanding of the destructive life blindness of the global market system was, after 9/11, a monoculture of one enemy which was disconnected from every real problem humanity faces. That's the big disconnection. We need to keep in mind here that it was 1 month before 9/11 that the greatest international demonstration ever against the global market system occurred, with NATO warplanes flying overhead in Genoa and police beating masses of demonstrators while they slept on false pretexts of terrorism amongst them. 9/11 reversed the historical tide forming against the global corporate system, its most concealed function. The inner algorithm of command of the global market system itself was war drummed out of view. The bearer of this determining algorithm of the mega machine is the ruling market group mind, and it is regulated by the following set of principles to which all of official culture conforms without question, including our own. One, this is the bear type. Pursuit in a market order of maximum monetary assets and commodities for oneself is natural for humans, rational in all places and times, necessary for all social progress and development. Two, there is no rightful limit on acquisition of these market assets and all things, or any countervailing right to redistribution of their holdings, however unequal they become. Leo Strauss, the man behind the National Security Council for years in the U.S., the theoretician, says that limitless accumulation of private capital is the highest moral duty. Three, Freedom to buy and sell and self-maximizing transactions of money and price commodities is the basis of all human liberty and justice, and there is no outer limit in its rightful globalization. 4. The market's money price system always optimally allocates resources and distributes goods and services in each and every society to ensure the best of all possible worlds. 5. I mean, this is all deducible for or axiomatized in neoclassical theory. Money profit maximization by investors is the ultimate engine of economic and social advance and is maximally liberated from the dead hand of state regulation and ownership. 6. Government intervention, therefore, in the self-regulating market is wrong unless it supports the market system and dictatorial in proportion to replacement of free market flows of market commodities and capital. And this is why we can understand what's going on in Venezuela and Haiti before that. And so on. 7. Individual consumer desires are permanently increasing and unlimited in their growth by human nature and are what all free people want more to satisfy. 8. The public interest in human welfare are only increased by a market economy which produces all that is good, including democracy, poverty alleviation, and human civilization. Market growth is therefore beneficial in all places and time with no limit to the conversion of planetary and human life organization into more priced goods for consumers and profits for firms. Protection of domestic production of any type is the evil of protectionism, although subsidization of dominant enterprises may be necessary to the national interest. 11. Whatever facts of life disaster may seem to contradict the necessity and validity of market principles 1 through 10, the ones I just read, they're always understood as corrected by better application and more rigorous application of market principles. 12. If the creative destruction, as it's called, of the global market destroys old environments and ways of life, these are unavoidable costs of technological progress to be solved by market means. 13. Individuals, groups, or governments which doubt or criticize, and here we get the war drum beginning, the supremacy of the market system or the inherent efficiency of its production and distribution or the freedom of its agents, thereby reject the free market and therefore democracy, and are therefore, it follows by transitivity, dangerous to humanity. 14. Any and all societies, parties, or governments which seek any lived alternative, and this is always what they attack, any lived alternative of economic organization, are to the extent of this irrational or evil and must be prevailed over by all means available, including armed force, and I would add 9/11, to protect and advance the free world for all. That's the Meta Program. A simple question tests the hold of these principles. What government, mass medium, or neoclassical economist does not conform to each and all of them? The Bush Jr. administration may be specially extreme in pushing the globalized free market by force of arms on false pretexts, but which of these principles is transgressed in speech or policy by even leaders of this administration's opponents? Who suggests that Iraq should be left free to pursue its own choice of a socialist path? More challengingly, we may ask, which was set up all long before Saddam, what market principle in any way rules out war criminal invasion of non-market societies? Or more challenging, we may ask, how would the allowance of 9/11, the engineering of 9/11 itself, violate any market principle? The answer is that it does not. The only cost recognized by the market value calculus is a cost to business. Lives are worth nothing. Only market incomes are. In fact, no high-income executive, another strange fact not investigated, seems to have been there on 9/11, and the costs were borne by the public. As for the U.S. market itself, it was already in a deep slide before 9/11, stimulated massive new government spending. The market recession was, of course, blamed on the terrorist attack. But that is an operation of the market group mind. Any facts which do not fit its assumptions are preconsciously inverted and reversed so that they do. More revealingly, the market meta program favors 9/11 by favoring its consequences. Destruction of a socialist state or an Islamic society for replacement by a free market is the maximum good possible for it. If we see through this moral prism the set points of market understanding, only necessary and beneficent effects appear through the lenses of perception. Who could disagree with overthrow of an alien state dictatorship? Two of them, sitting near or on the global market's most precious and increasingly needed wealth. The magic thinking of market logic then cascades into optimal states of expectation afterwards. Extension of more efficient market relations of production and distribution to the locked-in resources and people involved. New private capital formations and freedoms. Opportunities for spectacular market growth where before there was none. Relief of consumers from inefficient Arab monopoly of oil. A competitive price system to properly deploy and allocate resources instead of an Islamic or socialist prison keeping the people in backward dependency on handouts and subsidies. And historic new vistas for foreign capital and local entrepreneurs to lead undeveloped Afghanistani and Iraqi societies out of the dark ages to the summum bonum of the era, the first Islamic market miracle. Certainly such market magic thinking and blindness to life facts has been abundantly evidenced already from the planning of the invasion on. Complete absence of any post-invasion plan to rebuild the economy shattered by two saturation bombings and 12 years of U.S. enforced sanctions. To restore the destroyed life infrastructure that had killed over 500,000 children, or indeed to do anything but let an imagined liberation and market miracle spontaneously recreate a society from the genocide of the society, the socialist society, over 12 years. This revealed a derangement of mind disconnected from the life world, but no one has yet followed it back to its source. The complete incapacity of the market state invaders to plan for or provide even public security of the most basic infrastructures of water and electricity, let alone food and employment or health care or education or freedom from attack, and most of which Iraq had led the region in development prior to the first invasion, the key ignored fact, revealed a superstitious structure of market logic at work. Could any mumming of slogans and systematic destruction of life systems from the dark ages rival this continuously barbaric outcome? Yet what market principle selects against any step? The deep prejudice of the market calculus that it is lifeblind in principle and can only compute money sequences and sums. The same set point of perception and value judgment reaches back to 9/11 and before. The unspeakable truth is that no market principle is not better realized through the 9/11 attack, and that's why people keep saying it's better. Okay, it has to be better. If 9/11 had not been planned by the ex-ally bin Laden and enacted by the, quote, moral equivalents of the founding fathers, unquote, as Reagan called the Taliban and their allies, in the U.S. finance war against another secular socialist government, what else could have justified the new global market wars? Market logic is the hidden system decider throughout. One more level of the metaprogram of the mind, however, is required to propel and legitimate its supreme crimes against humanity as acts of self-defense and liberation. That is the religion of America. And it expresses the global market program as a war crusade across the world with America as the Messiah state. This layer of the ruling group mind is what directly regulates the hearts and minds of America. It's their daily frame of reference and fixed pole star. This mind can only feel and see inside its own close circle. U.S., our own group, in the master phrase of the philosopher King Leo Strauss. The ruling group locates the group mind it shares with the people by poles of opinion and arrives at the narcissist's center for everything in the religion of America, America itself. What is of everywhere else angry at lawless U.S.-led destruction of planetary life organization is reversed now into a hatred of America, the new correlative of anti-Semitism. Here or there, the narcissist's self-center can only go one place, back to itself as good. And others as jealous or evil. Clinically, psychiatry knows the disorder as a propensity to auto-suggestive hysteria and disconnection from reality, apt descriptors. When psychopathic, diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders suggests, the self-centered lies glibly, manipulates others, is parasitic, and denies all responsibility for destructive actions. The clinical definitions and the reality meet, but do not give us the regulating frame of mind through which it sees and comprehends the syntax of meaning in terms of which it knows itself as free and good. The group mind of America, the second coming by force of arms. The moral syntax of the American group mind is the wheel within the wheel of the global market religion. All its principles are presupposed as the way that God is presupposed by the religious fundamentalists. An all-powerful, all-knowing, and jealous ruler of the world rightfully determines the course of reality, and none may doubt it. We may know of the pre-Reformation Islam that is the primitive counterpart, but we do not know the beast itself. We sense it in U.S. witch hunts and vast prisons of the poor, doing no offense to any person. 86% are there for no harm to the person. But we do not see the creed's fanatical mode in the global market's expansion led by the U.S. in the war crusade that has no end and understands itself as freedom. The God of America is primitive. It worships itself. But there are a set of silently regulating principles at work through all the phenomena of its rule, which together constitute the ruling group mind, which has imprisoned global culture within its premises since 9/11. And I'm only going to give one, but it's the key one. The ultimately regulating premise of this ruling group mind is that the U.S. national security state is America. This assertion is never directly stated because that would reveal the absurdity of the equation. But the assumption nevertheless regulates every statement on Americans' relations with the rest of the world, which have been proclaimed from the U.S. government since 9/11. It, in turn, is rooted in a deep cultural chorality which it expresses in Leviathan form. The state does. And the deep cultural form is, I can kill, therefore I am. This is a logic that goes back to before Hegel's master-slave dialectic first glorified its threat as the source of philosophy. There is almost no popular form of American culture that does not bear its undertow meaning. From hunting, WrestleMania, and video games to the language of sports and dramatic content of television and movie entertainments. We won't explore this meaning here, but we'll consider only the institutionalized form of it on the world stage. The equation of meaning between the U.S. Armed Forces Command and war and intelligence apparatus, and America itself as a country, and increasingly Canada. This preconscious equation explains, for example, why even the U.S. government's official opposition, the Democratic Party, abdicated from political responsibility in its fear of appearing to oppose unjustified wars against essentially defenseless third world societies. They too are all incarcerated within the ruling structure of mind, more paralyzed than 1930 Germans in their dread of being named unpatriotic. This is a fear which can only be explained by the equation of the state military command and its apparatus with America. Beneath the surface phenomena of party politics and competing media and opinions, the great diversity, rules one group mind. The equation of America to its armed state apparatus is never publicly challenged in the official culture of the free world because the equation is assumed a priori. No one who houses the false equation can tell them apart. They cannot see, therefore, the demonstrable falsehoods of the war state, the overthrow of the Republic's democratic traditions, and least of all the safety of millions of innocent civilians in other countries, not to say the 2,600 deaths of U.S. citizens, because they assume America and its national security apparatus are one and the same. Since they love America and America is it, and we love America as our neighbor, none of us can distinguish between our beloved country and the criminal gang institutions of the National Security Council, the Pentagon, and the CIA. As these rogue secret societies, especially the U.S. intelligence, defense intelligence, as these rogue secret societies rule on behalf of U.S. investments across the world by the force of armed terror, mass disinformation, secret narco links, and political bribery and coercion at every level, lovers of America are obliged to defend this monstrous construction as America. This equation and the president as the president. This equation obliges them to be blind to fact. It then misleads them into supposing that anyone who opposes a gangster state rule of the world is anti-American. One absurd equation develops and builds on another, and ends as a paranoid mass cult characterized as patriotism. Just as in the 1930s with the world's most powerful industrial state. It is this false equation at the baseline of the group mind that we find the kernel of our world's problem. America's self-definition is capacity to kill others, unbound by international law. 9/11 is both the karmic blowback and the launching site of this self-equation in the global market war for empire without end. Thank you.
You've just been listening to the second and final part of a speech given by Professor of Philosophy, Dr. John McMurtry, of the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada. The title of the speech is Why the Facts of 9/11 Are Suppressed, Understanding the Ruling Group Mind Behind the War Without End. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion of that speech. It's 8 years since this speech was given. Yet the war without end still blazes on. From Afghanistan and Pakistan to Iraq, then Libya, now Syria, and next Iran. And, 8 years later, the facts of 9/11 still remain suppressed. But the 9/11 truth movement, in spite of being heavily infiltrated with lots of inside squabbling, has made tremendous progress in getting the word out about the lies and cover-up of 9/11 in both the Bush and Obama administrations. With 1,672 architects and engineers pursuing the truth and exposing the government lies, to the many professional organizations with websites like pilots, lawyers, media professionals, religious leaders, political leaders, military officers, firefighters, to name just a few, all demanding 9/11 truth, and the actors and artists with celebrities like Woody Harrelson, Ed Asner, Daniel Sunjata, Martin Sheen, and many more, all working on a movie to expose the truth, the perpetrators of 9/11 have to be getting a little nervous. So keep spreading the truth. Show 9/11 movies at your local cable access station. Talk to your friends and family. Let's collectively break through this suppression of the facts. If you want your civil liberties back, if you want to end the 9/11 wars, if you want to curb corporate power, if you want to stop the 1% from transferring more of your tax dollars into their accounts, and if you want to expose the corporate media as the voice of propaganda and misinformation that it is, exposing the truth about 9/11 is the one thing that could stop the madness. This kind of suppression of the facts is not new to our government and media. Come to our progressive movie night on Wednesday, March 21st, and learn about the lies and cover-up of the Oklahoma City bombings in 1995. We'll be showing the movie A Noble Lie on Wednesday, March 21st at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. And now here's some information about my shows. 9/11 Wake Up Call can be heard on WWUH 91.3 FM on Wednesdays at 12 noon, and on WESU 88.1 FM on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Also, some of the older shows are archived at the website ct911truth.org, and you can catch the more recent ones by Googling Radio for All. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.